Hello, this is Dave with the News Gazette for Sunday, December 21st, 2025. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Incoming, Phase 2, says regarding the Champaign's downtown plaza. Nearby businesses bracing for impact of work set to start this summer and run through May of 2028. This article is by Jana Wersima. Smith Burger Company co-owner Drew Smith has mixed feelings about the city's two-phase approach to create a downtown plaza along Neal Street between Washington and Main Streets. When it comes to the completed first portion, which was concentrated on the southern end of this triangle of land, he feels that having Friday Night Live concerts on the new stage has been a boon to nearby businesses, including his own. However, he's a little concerned when it comes to Phase 2, which is concentrated on the northern end and involves converting a large parking lot into the remainder of the plaza. Smith Burger Company's downtown location is located next to the lot, as are a few other businesses. I feel like with downtown already having a lot of issues with parking, you're taking one of the main parking lots out. So I think that's going to be a struggle for a lot of people, Smith said. Construction on Phase 2 of the plaza isn't expected to begin until this summer, amid a few tweaks to the project. According to David Happ, a civil engineer with the city, the project was previously expected to be bid in January, with the work beginning in April. Design changes and changes to the scope of the project have caused the bid opening to be pushed back to April 2026, with construction starting in July, he wrote in a report to the City Council. Construction is expected to take 2 full years with a final completion date of early May 2028. The council voted Tuesday to approve a $198,500 change order to a contract with Clark Dietz for engineering services on Phase 2 of the project, which will bring the agreement's total not to exceed amount up to nearly $1.24 million. Happ said the increase is partially due to changes in the firm's scope of work, including the addition of restrooms to the project. Additionally, a preliminary environmental assessment of the site identified contaminated soils, likely due to leaking underground storage tanks previously on or near the site, which necessitates further study to refine the contaminated area and the soil remediation quantities, he said. When we initially started the project, there wasn't necessarily a plan for permanent bathrooms, said Lacey Rains Lowe, a city planning manager. And so that was certainly something we heard from our business owners. Additionally, while small business kiosks were already part of the plan, the city no longer plans to have these prefabricated, which also adds to the design cost for Phase 2, she said. According to Happ, this phase also includes a pop jet fountain, a lawn area, specialty lighting features that can change colors and designs seasonally, art elements, swings, benches, reconstruction of the intersection of Neal and Hill Streets, reconstruction of Washington from Neal to Hickory Street. Additionally, a city-owned lot south of the Orpheum will be converted into a gateway between the plaza and the public parking lot at Washington and Walnut Streets, Happ said. Lowe told the News Gazette that a curbless drive aisle is also included in Phase 2, though she indicated that previous plans for angled parking along the aisle, including accessible spaces, are being reassessed. She explained that this area might not be the best place for accessible spaces since it will be closed during special events. Additionally, She noted the reconstruction of Washington Street gives the city an opportunity to move where that boundary line is. We can change where that is to be able to accommodate the ADA parking, Lowe said. So we're looking at trying to get that ADA parking on the perimeter so it continues to be available. Safety is also a consideration for the city, given incidents that have occurred in other cities with vehicles being driven into crowds, she added. There are also planned changes to a city-owned parking lot north of the Orpheum, which is currently reserved for permit parking only. That will change when the project is completed, and it will just become hourly parking. Or perhaps we keep a portion for permit parking for adjacent businesses. We haven't sorted all the details out, Lowe said. But either way, it won't be permit only any longer, and we will be adding ADA spaces to that lot. The neighboring gravel lot is where the bathrooms will be located. The city is also looking at potential improvements to the parking lot at Washington and Walnut, including ensuring there are enough ADA spaces. While this would technically be a separate project, Lowe said the city would hope to secure funding and time the improvements so that they feel like part of the plaza project. She noted that the city wants to ensure that, in addition to the plaza, it is providing nearby amenities that ensure that it is creating a space that is welcoming and easy to use with easy to find parking. Lowe also noted that the plaza is based on a 2019 placemaking plan that involved robust community input. This is hopefully executing the vision that folks set, Lowe said. When asked what kind of feedback the city received from neighboring businesses on phase one, Lowe replied, there was a lot of nervousness, particularly coming out of the pandemic, and like, hey, I've got something that's working, let's not mess it up. However, she feels that the city was able to work with merchants to minimize disruptions during the construction of phase one, and staff plan to do the same during phase two. Cody Sokolsky of One Main Development and Big Grove Tavern said that while projects such as this present physical and fiscal challenges for all involved, the results of phase one indicate that the benefits outweigh the inconvenience. The restaurant, located in the One Main building at the tip of the phase one area, previously spoke out about its concerns regarding how construction might disrupt revenue from outdoor dining during the summer, which led the city to rearrange its construction schedule in an attempt to mitigate the impacts. We congratulate the city staff on their management of the project, Sokolsky said, on behalf of Big Grove. Their communication on plans or pivots as such helped immeasurably. With the same partnership, we are confident that inconveniences notwithstanding, that we will be left with a stronger downtown for all. We will look forward to the completion of phase two. Smith said that phase two could be beneficial as a family-friendly area if the city uses it for good programming. I don't know if that's going to sustain, if they're going to continue on with that, or if it's going to be something that after a year or two and trial and error, and then they're like, ah, it's not working, he said. And then it just becomes another park bench area to hang out on. He added that he's hoping for the best and appreciates the efforts the city is making to attract more families downtown. Still, he feels that the current plan removes a pretty popular and go-to parking lot and said the city has yet to reach out for his input on the project. Previous estimates have put the total cost of both phases of the plaza at $18.2 million. Lowe said that the city will have a better idea of the price tag once the design work for phase two is finished, but she said this figure is in the ballpark. All these tweaks are pretty minor, she said. For the most part, it's pretty well the same. Phase one of the project is located at the southern end of the plaza, near the One Main building at the northeast corner of Neal, Main, and Church Streets. It includes seating, bench swings, shade canopies, planters, art installations, and a stage. The stage was completed later than the other components, Economic Development Manager T.J. Blakeman said. It was in use starting in June. The city used the stage for three concert series, Rhythm and Roots during the Tuesday Farmers Market, Sound Bites during lunchtime on Thursdays, and Friday Night Live in partnership with 40 North. Blakeman noted that the city also used the space to host a showing of the movie Coco in October, in partnership with the Farmers Market. Additionally, city staff worked with partners to set up holiday-themed backdrops to provide photo opportunities for families during the Parade of Lights. And while the parade was canceled due to inclement weather, the displays are still up. Blakeman thinks that events on the plaza have been well received. Everything I've been told is that nearby businesses really enjoy the plaza and our efforts to drive people out to enjoy that plaza, he said. Kelly White, executive director of 40 North, said that using the new stage for Friday Night Live concerts was an absolute highlight this past summer. The space came alive as crowds gathered around the stage, music filling the plaza, while people mingled and grabbed to-go drinks, she said. It was great to see kids hula hooping, friends laughing on the swings, and folks stopping by to soak in the energy. The stage created a natural hub that brought everyone together, making Friday nights an even more vibrant, joyful community experience. We loved it, and the bands really enjoyed performing on the new stage. She told the News Gazette that the Arts Council plans to use the stage for its concert series again in 2026. It's certainly become the focal point, considering how everybody was kind of crammed into the old plaza, Blakeman said. This is night and day difference. People out there dancing and sitting enjoying the music. He also felt like the partnership with the Farmers Market went well and noted that the city worked with organizers to create a kids' corner for children to be entertained while their parents shopped. When it comes to sound bites, Blakeman said that turnout varied based on which performers were booked. The city also realized that timing played a role in the comfort of attendees at both this event series and the farmers market, as the weather became nicer once the sun dipped behind buildings around 3 or 4 p.m. In regards to 2026 programming, he said that there are a couple of unknowns, such as how Phase 2 construction will impact the farmers market and what changes might be made to sound bites. There's going to be some tweaks, Blakeman said. We don't have a solid plan. We'll unveil those closer to the spring. Continuing inside the front page, we have Top of the Morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rossow. Mark your holiday calendar. The Coral's annual holiday concert, canceled because of last weekend's miserable weather, has been rescheduled for January 10th at Faith United Methodist in Champaign. The group, which has been making wonderful music since 1982, made the decision to postpone at last Friday's rehearsal, but we're going to plow forward, member Susan Wyatt said. We're keeping the energy going. Email thecoral1982@gmail.com with questions. One of the area's longest-running Christmastime traditions, Luminaries, on Champaign's South Willis Avenue, continues at 5:15 p.m. on Sunday. It's year 32 for neighbors stretching from Springfield Avenue to John Street to place glowing candles in paper pages for passers-by to enjoy. It's year 45 for George Schoonover's amazing display at his Timberview Drive home in Mahomet, about 80,000 lights covering his roof, trees, bushes, windows, and even part of a neighbor's yard. With family help, he's happy to do it, even after the death of his wife, Dixie, in 2023. She would want me to keep it going, he said. He flips on the lights and music at 5 p.m. through December 31st. Not on my watch's popular and helpful toy giveaway is 3 to 5 p.m. Sunday at Bob Fulling's Hope Center in Rantoul. Organizer Hub Burnett has purchased more than 1,000 items to distribute what he expects will be a huge turnout in year 6 of his initiative, People Are Hurting. Area history. In 1925, Christmas week was ushered in by a miniature blizzard and a considerable drop in temperature. Snow and colder for today, but fair tomorrow, was the Weather Bureau's prediction. Snow fell during the night, following a day of drizzling rain. In 1975, directors of the U of I's Levi's Faculty Center voted unanimously to oppose a recommendation that students be allowed to use the center. Last week, the student-dominated Illini Union Board made the recommendation that students be allowed to patronize Levi's. Illini Union staff have been managing Levi's on a provisional basis since October. In 2010, the USDA has awarded $5.5 million to fund research to alleviate childhood hunger, with the University of Illinois playing a large role. Craig Gunderson, an associate professor of nutritional sciences at the University of Illinois, and James Ziliak of the University of Kentucky Center for Poverty Research will work together to coordinate a research program on childhood hunger. International history, today's highlight. On December 20th, 1803, the Louisiana Purchase was completed as ownership of the territory was formally transferred from France to the United States. On this date, in 1860, South Carolina became the first state to secede from the Union on a vote of delegates at a secession convention, emboldening other southern states to follow suit and helping to trigger the American Civil War. In 1946, the classic holiday film, It's a Wonderful Life, premiered at the Globe Theater in New York City. And in 1986, three black men were attacked by a group of white youths in the Howard Beach neighborhood of Queens, New York, resulting in the death of one of the men, Michael Griffith. In 1987, more than 4,300 people were killed when the Dona Paz, a Philippine passenger ship, collided with the tanker Vector off Mindoro Island. And in 1989, the United States launched Operation Just Cause, sending troops into Panama to topple the government of General Manuel Noriega. And continuing in our communities, from the Champaign County Board, article titled, Higher Taxes or Service Staff Cuts? Non-binding question on primary ballot to take voters' temperature on addressing budget shortfall. This is by Jana Wersima. Champaign County voters will have a conundrum to consider when they look over their ballots for the March 17th primary. A non-binding referendum approved by the county board Thursday after an amendment by board member John Farney will ask residents whether they support raising taxes or cutting personnel and services in order to address the county's general fund deficit. It is to the point, Farney said, we have a deficit. Here's the two ways to fix it. What's your choice? Neither of them are good. The query is one of three advisory questions that the board members voted to place on the ballot. The other two are yes or no questions, with one asking if voters would support an increase in the county's sales tax rate to address the deficit, and the other gauging support for a property tax rate increase. Board Chair Jennifer Locke said in a previous interview that if the county seeks to raise sales or property taxes in the future, a separate referendum would be required. She compared the non-binding ballot questions to taking a poll with the results informing the board as it makes decisions. As part of this year's budgeting process, the board transferred almost $2 million from the public safety sales fund to the general fund to float the current deficit, she said. A previous form of the "would you rather" question asked if voters would support a reduction in county services, such as fewer sheriff's deputies, reduced hours for public service from county departments, less county highway maintenance, and or county employee layoffs as a solution to the deficit. Farney, who made the motion to amend, expressed concern that if the original yes or no form of the question was on the ballot alongside the other two, many people might vote no on all three, leaving the county with little direction on how to proceed. He also asked that this question be listed before the other two on the ballot. This question is to me the most important one, which is why Farney suggested moving it forward, because this is the one that's going to give us information from the electorate on what to do. Locke agreed, because we're going to come in here with a deficit again next year, and we need to know if we should just cut it to the bones because the voter said so, or we need to know if we should pass a tax. In discussing how the question should be worded, Finance Committee Chair Ellie Hanauer-Friedman and County Executive Steve Summers both expressed support for leaving in the additional language about what personnel and service cuts could entail so that voters have an idea of what to expect. However, board member John Cagle felt that this verbiage should be left out to avoid emotional manipulation of voters. Additionally, board member Brett Pugh said he recently spoke with county engineer Jeff Blue, who told him that highway maintenance is largely funded by the motor fuel tax rather than the general fund, so it'll be almost negligibly impacted. The approved form of the question did not include the examples used in the original version. Other items of note from Thursday's meeting: the board voted to extend the county's moratorium on carbon sequestration activities by 6 months. An agreement with Street College for reentry services was also approved. The resolution provides a one-time allocation of $100,000 to support programming in both the county's juvenile detention center and the community. Per its mission statement, the organization introduces underserved youth and young adults to STEAM subjects from a hip-hop perspective. According to county officials, Street College has lost funding due to federal budget cuts. The allocation will come from the county's public safety sales tax fund, Farney said. A request from the University of Illinois Extension Office for $125,000 to support the SNAP Ed program was denied. The funds would have been allocated from interest earned on American Rescue Plan Act funds, said board member Stephanie Furtado. Continuing with Kathy's mailbag, the question is, I haven't heard much about the Champaign County Rural Fiber Project lately, and I'm eagerly awaiting a chance to upgrade my internet service. Has it stalled? Can you get us an update? The Connect Rural Fiber Project is a partnership among Volo Broadband, the Champaign County Farm Bureau, Champaign County Government, and the State of Illinois. And a lot is happening behind the scenes. Jason Young, Volo's Director of Growth and Strategy, said the project's goal to make gold standard fiber optic internet available to rural residents and businesses in East Central Illinois requires a lengthy pre-construction process that must be completed before Phase 1 customers can be connected in 2026. Young said supply chain delays have been resolved and most of the necessary fiber has been delivered, so the 660 homes along the backbone path will have service by the end of September 2026. Property owners on this path should have already heard from us and, if necessary, signed an easement for construction, he said. potential Phase 1 customers will be contacted to go over service options and installation details starting in May 2026. He said Volo is still working through the permitting process and finalizing easements from individual landowners. These steps must be completed before construction of the backbone can begin, and thus before customer installations can be made available. The backbone path snakes through several townships surrounding Champaign-Urbana. The backbone is the primary network of cables and routers that serves as the main data highway, connecting to more localized networks as the project expands to new areas beyond the backbone. One of the most interesting aspects of constructing this scale of project is that the physical construction is relatively straightforward and fast, while the planning, design, permitting, and formal processes required to construct it are much less so, Young said. This is especially true when ensuring that the project is providing the appropriate level of care and consideration to the property owner's rights, as we have throughout the Connect Champaign County project. We continue to add new easement signatures weekly, he added. The biggest obstacle has been simply reaching all the property owners involved in Phase 1. Since our contact information is limited to what is publicly available, when we don't hear back, we don't know if they are ignoring us or if we have the wrong contact info. For rural residents who are reading this, the one message we would like to convey is that they should reach out to us at 217-945-5495, Young said. Not responding is just going to cost the project more and reduce the value for all of us. He said a rural fiber project of this size and scope also can be challenging because it may have one or no serviceable locations for over a mile, either as part of the backbone or on its way to serve customers. So it's not always as simple as walking up and knocking on a door because, well, there may be no door, or that door may be in an office complex, not in this state. Honestly, the best part about our community and our local area has been the assistance of neighbors and local organizations, like the Champaign County Farm Bureau, reaching out to landowners to spur response, he said. It has been incredible to see, and we are fortunate to have such strong local ties to our East Central Illinois agricultural community. For that, we have been thankful. Next phases, late 2026 and beyond. When we last spoke about it, we had a concrete plan and funding for the first phase, which would serve 660 homes and establish a backbone for long-term growth. But future phases were still in the dream stage. We now have preliminarily awarded funding and a plan for two more phases, which will serve over 1,800 additional rural homes and businesses, thanks to the efforts of our team at Volo.net, Intertech, and support from the Champaign County Board, Farm Bureau, and the State of Illinois. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette for Sunday, December 21st, 2025. Please stay tuned.